If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, I'm Carol Gold. Welcome to Above the Fray. Our number here is 914-803-4522, and we encourage you to call in and join the conversation. Welcoming Steve Clark, my co-host. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Carol.
Steve, there's no way that we can't talk about this deal with Iran, and on so many levels, whether it's in terms of the position it places Israel in, or it's in terms of how Congress basically sanctioned this deal before it was ever cut, and we can go into that in a bit. But the issue that just sticks in my craw, so to speak, more than anything else, is how in the world do we negotiate a deal where they get $160 billion, sanctions lifted, weapons production permission, delayed verification, and we leave Americans there hostage? It is the most shameful act of this presidency I have ever seen. And I am appalled. And you know, Steve, last night I was watching DVD. I was watching one of the episodes of the show that used to be on West Wing. And it happened to be an episode where a North Korean concert pianist is performing at the White House. So he's here from North Korea, and all his handlers are all around him, and they don't leave him alone for a minute. And he's in the White House. He's in the Oval Office, and he's shaking hands with the president for a photo op. And he turns to give the president one of his CDs. And he starts to walk away, and he turns back, and he says to President Bartlett, I autograph for you. And he reaches down and he signs the CD. And when he walks out of the Oval Office, Bartlett looks at the CD and there's no autograph on it. It says, I wish to defect. Well, the president and his chief of staff and others immediately go into crisis mode. And after conferring, they decide they cannot allow him to defect. They cannot assist him because at that moment, they're at the table with the North Koreans negotiating the weapons program, North Korean weapons program. And so they turn him down. They tell him they will not assist him in defecting. He goes back very tragically and sad. He leaves the next day after his concert. And hours after he leaves, the North Koreans walk away from the table because they claim they didn't like the size of the flags that were on the negotiating table. And so the tragedy is that this young man was kept from defecting because they were afraid they'd blow up a deal with a fundamentally corrupt, deceitful, and warmongering culture, nation, whatever. And today, when Major Garrett from CBS News, I don't know if you heard it yet or saw it, Steve, did you? Did you see what Garrett asked Obama in the presser?
I did not see it, no.
He stood up and he said, basically, how can you be content with this deal where we're leaving American hostages behind? And Obama gets really huffy and really nasty. And he chides Garrett on how he, quote, framed the question, how cleverly he framed the question. And Obama says, what makes you think that I would be content with that situation? And he goes on to try to say that the reason they did it is because they didn't want to give the Iranians the impression that they could get more concessions out of us if the hostages were part of the negotiation. The logic of that boggles my mind because he's basically saying we took the hostages off the table because we didn't want to give Iran more negotiating power. Yet think about it. They got all these things they wanted. Are you telling me that if we had said, you can have what you want, but we want the four people back, and we want them now or there's no deal, that would have given Iran more negotiating room. They got everything they wanted anyway. So, Steve, let's start off, because you're an ex-Marine. You served in Iraq, I believe. And I would like to hear from you on leaving Americans behind at a table where the enemy or the adversary gets everything they've asked for, and we get nothing other than the president's promise that this has prevented a nuclear Iran. How does it feel, Steve, when you're an American soldier and you hear that soldiers are left behind?
Well, first off, I'm outraged. It's ridiculous. And just so you know, it's one of the persons is actually a former Marine. He's there. It boggles the mind, and also it's like the question that you just said before, that the logic behind it of him saying that we took it off the table doesn't make any sense at all. So never have I seen a negotiation like that, where essentially Iran got everything and the U.S. got nothing. It is so fundamentally flawed that it's almost impossible to comprehend that one of the most significant deals that Iran has done in, I don't know, how many years, 20, 30 years, that they get all the concessions and at the same time they get to keep the hostages. And the last, you know, kind of thing that really boggles the mind is that it's well known and regarded that Iran is a country that is one of the leading state sponsors of terrorism around the world. And let's call it what it is. They were one of the leaders of sending troops to Iraq. They literally have blood on their hands. And to say that we negotiated a deal in peace that would bring more peace, how is that bringing more peace when they're actually keeping our Americans as hostages? It doesn't make any sense at all. And so if it doesn't make any sense at all, there's got to be more to that story. There's got to be something more that we're missing. That's kind of my initial thoughts. I'll turn it back over to you, but I'll have some other thoughts as we go forward on this.
Steve, I don't know that there's more. You know, there seems like there ought to be more. But when you look at the pattern of behavior, when you look at what happened with the Bo Bergdahl exchange for those five top-level terrorists that were in Guantanamo, when you look at the pattern of behavior in this administration and foreign policy and how we treat our friends and how we treat our enemies, I don't know that there's more to it, because I just feel there's this level of hubris with this president that he doesn't even feel he needs to justify or explain what, to me, and I know to many other Americans, is un-American behavior. You know, Daniel Greenfeld, who writes for Front Page magazine, has a brilliant article out today on Front Page, and it's titled something akin to, I'm going to paraphrase, but it's basically the deal is cut and Obama and Kerry are traitors because the deal is treasonous. And you almost, I mean, I read the article. He chronicled Kerry's past all the way back to what we know, Vietnam, when he met with the Viet Cong, when he came back from that meeting and he testified before Congress against American soldiers and allegedly these horror acts they were committing in Vietnam. And he went and he sided with the Sandinistas. He went and he praised Bashar Assad. Kerry is a socialist / communist just about from way back. And this president, raised by radicals, by his own admission in his book, Dreams from My Father, that he chose as his partners in college very selectively, he said. He was careful who he hung with. And he hung with radical feminists and radical Marxists, and he sought out Marxist professors. These are his own words from his own book, which he reads in the audio version. He reads those words himself. And so it makes me think that while logically there should be more. In other words, we would love to find out 2 days from now that they were almost closing a side deal, right, on getting back those four from that are in, or five that are hostages now in Iran. We'd like to believe that 2 days from now there was a back channel, right, and that they couldn't say anything because they weren't out yet. I don't think that's the case here, Steve. I think this crew is now so arrogant and so out of the closet in their disdain for America and their determination to right what they perceive to be the wrongs of history that, you know, as someone said, and I might be taking this from the Greenfield article, I'm not sure, but I heard or read in the last 24 hours, it's worse than Neville Chamberlain and Hitler. Because Chamberlain believed he was doing the right thing. And when he realized he wasn't, he resigned. These guys don't think they're doing the right thing. They're doing what they want. They're shaping America the way they want it. And they could care less about rightness or wrongness.
Carol, this is what I think on the other, on the flip side, which it, if it doesn't make logic, then it goes back to your point. Valerie Jarrett, you know, has Iranian descent. And I think Obama is, you know, in many ways, like you said, he is a sympathizer to the cause of, I would say, more of the Muslims and more anti-American. And he's almost like the perfect, he is almost a Manchurian candidate, which is,
yes.
If you haven't seen the movie, it's, you know, from the 50s, and basically it's how soldiers were brainwashed to work for the enemy. But I would say, you know, that was done deliberately and purposefully, and the candidates didn't realize they were being brainwashed. I would say Obama has an ideology, and he's been purposefully brainwashed and has certain personal beliefs that are against the American ideal. So if you look at this on the face of it, it only makes sense if you look at it from the context that he sees it, where he thinks that a lot of the people in the third world have been oppressed, and this is his way, and this is his mechanism to right some of those wrongs. And the people that are going to suffer are going to be the people here in the U.S. The other angle that I looked at it is more diabolical in nature, but it's again, it's kind of the finance background in me, that you look at these deals. And the best analogy I can give to you is basically in a policy that, you know, dates back many, many years, is that is the U.S. in many ways has argued and lobbied and pushed for our enemies to fight each other in the hopes that we wouldn't have to fight them on the battlefield. And one, if you could look at the case back to the Iraq and Iran war, where we didn't back either side, and we were content that both sides were killing each other. The piece that I read today by James Rickards is that he says, if you look at it from a finance standpoint and a market standpoint, it makes a lot of sense. You basically neutralize the Sunnis and the Shiites, where they're in constant friction with each other. You put Saudi Arabia versus Iran. You put Israel versus Iran, you pit these different coalitions now against each other, and the U.S. from a standards point basically has neutralized the region. Who benefits? Well, the benefits is the people in the defense industry. It's a great market for defense contractors. It's a great market for people who are in the arms business, where they get to supply both sides. And it's apropos. Basically, the Iraq-Iran war, where basically we're letting both sides fight each other out in the hopes that the U.S. doesn't have to go into the war. That's kind of the other viewpoint that I've looked at, and I think there is some truth to it. But in the end, no matter how you put it, I have the personal belief that it's a very bad deal for the U.S., and I tend to agree with your first outtake that it doesn't make any sense from the U.S. standpoint to agree to such a deal.
I don't think it's as much a bad deal for the U.S. as I think it's a bad deal for the world. Because, as Netanyahu has said, One thing has not changed in Israel's approach, and that is they cannot allow a nuclear Iran. It's a matter of ultimate survival. And anyone who isn't Jewish, who doesn't understand the legacy of the Holocaust in terms of the psychology of Jews, is, and particularly Jews living on the land in Israel, is missing something. They're missing a variable that they can't afford to miss, meaning Jews left the Holocaust with a legacy. When they say never again, when we say never again, we mean never again. We mean never again will we allow it to happen. If we go down in a blaze of glory, so be it. But never again will it happen that we silently allow ourselves to be led to slaughter. Iran's intentions are very clear. They're no different than ISIL's intention, because they are both fundamentalist Muslims, and they both believe in the return of the Mahdi, and they both believe in the 12th Imam, and they both believe in a worldwide caliphate, and they both believe in a world dominated by Sharia law. And that excludes the West and Israel and everyone else who doesn't believe in Islam and who doesn't pay tribute to Muhammad. And so Israel has to act. Now, that's what they've created. And so whether it's a good deal financially for the military establishments in various countries or not, it's a bad deal for the world, because it's going to lead to, at least if not a world war, it's got military war. It's going to lead to certainly some limited war, and people are going to die on all sides. And I also think that if that happens, and the reason I think it's going to happen is because while the U.S. is denying Israel airspace over Iraq or the right to refuel there, Saudi Arabia is not. Saudi Arabia has both the resources, the airstrips, they have the airspace that will assist Israel in doing whatever it is Israel intends to do in Iran. Now, I've also had the impression from what I've been reading that Israeli Air Force, Israeli soldiers who are in the Air Force and will fly planes, will fly them knowing they're not coming home. It will be very much a suicide mission, what they have to do to take out those reactors, or at least to do enough damage to the surface areas and to the population to set them back. And so this is a very bad deal for humanity. It isn't just about the United States and its position of authority or power in the world, or even about the Marxist leanings and the West, what I want to call hatred. You know, I grew up, Steve, there was always an expression, there's something that's called a self-hating Jew. And it's Jews who are sort of embarrassed by their Judaism, and they're the first to criticize other Jews because they have their own shame around the fact that they're Jewish. I actually believe that Barack Obama is a self-hating American. And I think John Kerry is too, especially with his obsession with everything French. I actually think they are both self-hating Americans. And I want to make one more point about your reference to the Manchurian candidate. Number one, anyone who hasn't seen that movie listening to this show, please go get that movie, rent it, download, whatever you have to do, Netflix it. I don't know where you get it. It's very old. It probably is the 50s or 60s at the latest. But that movie, I'm drawing a blank on who played the lead. I know Angela Lansbury.
Frank Sinatra.
Who?
Frank Sinatra was one of the main characters. I forget the lead.
No, the guy who played the lead, Angela Lansbury, played the mother who was intimately involved with the manipulation of the minds of the soldiers. But the one who played the lead, the reason the movie's called The Manchurian Candidate, yes, while they brainwashed soldiers, they brainwashed her son with her permission. She conspired with the Chinese to brainwash him. And he was going to be the candidate for president of the United States when he was shot and killed in the end of the movie. And so it's more than just soldiers. It's eerily prophetic, that movie, because funny you would say Manchurian Candidate. Today I heard Sean Hannity make the same reference to the same movie. And I probably for 3 years have been talking about this guy as the Manchurian Candidate. I'm not saying I was the first. I'm sure there are other people that had the same idea even before I did. But I actually believe, because it didn't just stop with his childhood. It went through all those years he sat in Reverend Wright's church and listened to hatred spewed against his country. He has been brainwashed. Whether intentional or not, he has been brainwashed. He is definitely, he has a vision of America, and his wife has a vision of America that is nothing other than anti-American. And I have never been this sure of who he is as I am with this deal. Now, let's put Congress, let's put blame where it belongs, Steve. The Republican Congress made sure he got this deal. And this is the part that's equally as disturbing, because they voted about a month and a half or 2 months ago, whenever it was. Had there been no congressional vote, Obama would have had to have two-thirds of the Senate confirm the deal. Instead, they voted to have two-thirds of the Senate necessary to kill the deal. They reversed the burden of proof, as it were. As a lawyer, that's how I think about it. They reversed the burden of proof from the president having to get two-thirds approval to the Congress needing two-thirds to defeat it. And they'll never get two-thirds. And what I don't understand is that Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee all voted for that change. And so he isn't worried at all that this deal is going to stand. Our only hope is a Republican president that will on day one undo the deal, because it's done by presidential order alone.
Yeah, Carol, I want to mention one other thing that I thought was really telling. One of the interviews yesterday, the reporter asked Obama a question, and because of the uniqueness of this deal, and Obama laid out the ground that this was not a unique deal, that the U.S. has negotiated many times, for example, with Russia in the past regarding nuclear deals. And that was kind of his benchmark that gave him his authority to do so. And I think that's actually quite telling, because if you think about it from a long-term standpoint, the U.S. and Russia, when they went to the table to negotiate these deals in the past, they both came at it mutually afraid and mutually understanding the devastation that it could cause. They were both equally scared of the other, and so both would put their chips on the table to come to a conclusion that we didn't want this to happen. The rhetoric was never one of escalation. It was one where it was cautious and guarded pessimism to get a deal done. They would work tirelessly to figure out a way not to have a nuclear war. So I think it's actually quite telling. Now, contrast that with the discourse and the words that Iran has used, where they've actually said, we want to wipe our enemies off the map. We seek the destruction of Israel. We are actually having marches in Iran saying death to America. So all the dialogue and discourse and the words that they've used, the language they've used, has all come with the destruction of the U.S. And what we're doing with that discourse, we're actually giving them the means to acquire that. So it's actually, it's actually, again, the president twisting and changing the context of history and getting people to see something in a new light. It's essentially the rewriting of history and not understanding the context of where those deals and how those deals got done.
Well, you make a good point. Let me give you the basis for the point you're making. Number one, the Quran says that the Mahdi, that the prophet cannot come until the world is washed in blood. That's the prerequisite for the return of the Mahdi. And so in order for them to have their global caliphate, they have to wash the world in blood. So when these people chant death to America and death to the big Satan and death to the little Satan Israel, they're not just blowing smoke. They mean it. They seek it. They value death more than life. They believe it is the greatest gift they can give Allah is to die in service to spreading Islam. In addition, the concept of taqiyya, T-A-Q-I-Y-Y-A, I believe it is, in Arabic. Taqiyya is the concept in Islam that requires, permits, and even requires a Muslim to lie to an infidel in the furtherance of Islam. And so you have these people sitting at a conference table on one side, idiot John Kerry and Barack Obama negotiating as if words mean something, as if terms mean something. And on the other side of the table, you have people lying through their teeth knowingly, because they're allowed to do that and smile and shake your hand because they're promoting Islam. And therefore, taqiyya absolves them of any wrongdoing within their religion. You know, Steve, I want to just quickly tell the parable for anybody who doesn't know it. Turtle is swimming across the river, and there's a scorpion standing by the side of the road, and by the side of the bank of the river. And the scorpion yells to the turtle, "Help me get across. Take me on your back. I can't get across any other way." And the turtle thinks about it for a minute, and he says to the scorpion, "I can't do that because you're going to get on my back, and at some point you're going to sting me, and I'm going to die." And the scorpion says, "Don't be ridiculous. Why would I do that? If I sting you and you die, I'm on your back, I'll die too." So the turtle gives it some thought, says it sounds reasonable, rational, logical. He says, "Okay, hop on." And smack in the middle of the river, the scorpion stings the turtle. And when the turtle looks up and says, "Why did you do that? Now we're both going to die." And the scorpion says, "Just my nature." That's what we're dealing with Iran, with ISIS, with radical Islam. We're dealing with people who it is their nature to be deceptive. They have permission to lie. They have a mission to their God, and the mission to their God is to kill everyone or convert everyone who doesn't believe as they do. And my biggest concern, as I wrote in a recent blog, Steve, is not as in 1932, oh my God, there was a bad guy, Hitler. In 1932, there was a desperate population called Germany that allowed a maniac like Hitler to have the power he had. And guess what? America in 2008 and 2012 was desperate enough and wanted hope enough and wanted change enough that it embraced another kind of maniac who now we are reaping, certainly not the rewards, but we will reap the consequences of his vision of the United States of America. And it is definitely antagonistic to any vision I've ever had or anyone that I know has ever had. Steve, we have a little over a minute. Do you want to say something to close?
No, that's good, Carol.
Well, we didn't get a chance to talk about Planned Parenthood. Perhaps we'll do it on our next show, Steve. Actually, we'll have a show tomorrow night because this show was Monday's show delayed. So we want to thank you for listening to Above the Fray podcast. Our audience is growing and our readers are growing on our website, abovethefraypodcast.com. Please check out our website, check out our blog. We write some really good stuff for you, and we hope we bring you really good information here on the show. I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
See you tomorrow night, everybody.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark. from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.